good afternoon. Thank you very much for coming. Thank you also to our colleagues who are coming from London. The Secretary General will start with his opening remarks, and then, as usual, he will be very happy to take your questions. Secretary General.
Good afternoon. Our summit in Wales this week will take place in a changed world. It will address the challenges of a changed world, and so I expect it to be a crucial summit in NATO's history. This is a time of multiple crises on several fronts. To the east, Russia is intervening overtly in Ukraine. To the south, we see growing instability with fragile states, the rise of extremism, and sectarian strife. These crises can erupt with little warning, move at great speed, and they all affect our security in different ways. NATO's greatest responsibility remains to protect and defend our populations and our territories. We also need the capacity to manage crises and to work with partners to help build stability. So, at the summit, we will ensure that the alliance remains ready, able, and willing to defend all allies against any attack. We will agree a readiness action plan to make NATO more agile than ever. The readiness action plan responds to Russia's aggressive behavior. But it equips the alliance to respond to all security challenges, wherever they may arise. We already have a NATO response force. This is a multinational force which brings together land, air, maritime, and special operation forces. It can be deployed anywhere in the world for collective defense or crisis management. We will now significantly enhance the responsiveness of our NATO response force. We will develop what I would call a spearhead within our response force, a very high readiness force able to deploy at very short notice. This spearhead would be provided by allies in rotation and could include several thousand troops ready to respond where needed with air, sea, and special forces support. This will require reception facilities on NATO territory and pre-positioned equipment and supplies, command and control, and logistics experts. So this force can travel light but strike hard if needed. We will also look at possible upgrades to national infrastructure. That could include airfields and ports to support reinforcements if the need arises. And we will improve our early warning through an upgrade of our intelligence gathering and sharing. We will update our defense plans and enhance our training schedule with more exercises of more types, in more places, more often. The readiness action plan will ensure that we have the right forces and the right equipment in the right place at the right time. That means more visible NATO presence in the East for as long as required. And it will make NATO fitter, faster, and more flexible to adjust to all kinds of security challenges. Not because NATO wants to attack anyone, but because the dangers and the threats are more present and more visible. And we will do what it takes to defend our allies. But readiness requires resources. So in Wales, I expect a commitment to increase defence investments as our economies recover, to spend the right amount of money on the right things, deployable forces well trained and with modern equipment, so that we share responsibility of collective defence just as we share the benefits. At the summit, we will meet with President Poroshenko of Ukraine and make clear our support for Ukraine as it is confronted by Russia's aggression. We will discuss his reform priorities and take concrete steps to help Ukraine. The crisis we face reach far beyond our borders. That is why our approach to security reaches beyond our borders too. We have an unparalleled network of partners around the world. In Afghanistan, we built the largest coalition in recent history, with one quarter of the world's nations. And through our operations, we have become better at working together than ever before. In Wales, we will further improve the way we train, cooperate and consult with our partners, and strengthen and streamline the way we support countries which seek our help to develop their security institutions, so that we can project stability without always projecting large numbers of troops. We will also prepare a new chapter in our relationship with Afghanistan as our combat mission draws to a close. We have done what we set out to do. We have denied safe haven to international terrorists. We have built up capable Afghan forces of 350,000 troops and police. So our nations are safer and Afghanistan is stronger. We have planned a new mission to train, advise and assist the Afghan forces from next year, and it will be launched once we have the legal arrangements in place. So it is vital to see a conclusion to the electoral process in Afghanistan. A conclusion which is accepted by both candidates and by the Afghan people. So there is still a lot of work to do. The security landscape can change rapidly, but I'm confident that NATO will go forward from the Wales summit ready to rise to every challenge. And with that, I'm ready to take your questions.
And Please don't forget to remind us your names and the outlets you work for. And for those of you who are unfamiliar with this particular press room, the microphones are next to your seats. You just need to lift the flap. We can start with Yunyan at the back.
Yep, Secretary General here. Ukrainian news agency Union Irina Sommer. I have actually two questions for you. We saw already reports that some NATO members would like to see a break of the basic agreement between NATO and Russia. What is your personal opinion on this, and do you see it coming at the summit? And second question is, will it be possible for Ukraine to become member of NATO in the case if this conflict, what we have right now, will be frozen? Thank you.
First of all, I think the first part of your question refers to the so-called NATO-Russia Founding Act from 1997. NATO sticks to the NATO-Russia Founding Act. All the measures we are going to take to enhance our collective defense will be in full accordance with the NATO-Russia Founding Act. What we have seen, unfortunately, is that Russia is in a blatant breach of the fundamental principles of the NATO-Russia Founding Act. And we urge Russia to comply with the provisions of the NATO-Russia Founding Act. NATO sticks to the Founding Act. Next, you ask me about Ukraine's possible membership perspectives. As you will recall, NATO made a clear statement on that at the NATO summit in Bucharest in 2008. We declared that Ukraine will become a member of NATO, provided, of course, Ukraine so wishes and provided Ukraine fulfills the necessary criteria. In the meantime, Ukraine has decided to pursue a so-called non-alliance policy. We fully respect that because we adhere to the principle that each and every nation has the right to decide on its security policies, including alliance affiliation, without an external interference. So we fully respect the choice of Ukraine. The same goes if Ukraine were to change its current policies of non-alliance position. In that case, we will discuss with Ukraine how to move forward.
James.
Yes, Brooke Signer, James Defense. Russia is undeniably an adversary of NATO in the West now. I think few observers would dispute that. So I have a question here for you. It's a long one, but I'll read it slowly. Without naming names and without using the alibi that NATO does not comment on the defense decisions of individual allies, because after all, this is a matter of collective defense against a very aggressive country, my question to you, do you think, as outgoing Secretary General, that it is a good idea for individual allies to sell major weapons systems such as, for instance, helicopter carriers, to Russia, which is clearly hostile to the alliance today? Your thoughts on that issue, I'm sure, will be greatly appreciated in allied capitals. Thank you.
And I think you will appreciate that I stick to my line, namely, this is, and it remains, a national decision. It is not for NATO as an alliance to interfere with such national decisions. Questions regarding delivery of military equipment are national issues, and that's why. Having said that, I am confident that each and every allied government will take such decisions, mindful of the overall security situation and concerns expressed by fellow allies.
Jim Neuger from Bloomberg with a question on the readiness action plan. As NATO troops rotate through the Eastern European frontline states, how many do you expect to be on the ground at any given time? And how many of the 28 allies do you expect to provide troops for these rotations?
It's a bit too early to speak about exact figures because the details will be worked out after the summit. The summit will take a decision on the plan as such, provide the political framework, but it will be quite detailed framework. However, as regards exact figures, that will be decided at a later stage, also based on military advice. For the same reason, I am not able to answer the second part of your question, how many allies will provide concrete troop contributions or concrete contributions of another kind. That remains to be seen, but I can tell you that all 28 allies contribute to the current reassurance measures one way or the other. One way or the other. Maybe not all of them with troop contributions, but then they provide other contributions. So this is a truly collective alliance effort in which all 28 allies contribute one way or the other.
Wall Street Journal.
Stephen Fidler, The Wall Street Journal. You mentioned the NATO-Russia Founding Act of 1997, which NATO will abide by. Is this one reason why one of the plans to respond to what the Russians have done in Ukraine is not permanent basing? In other words, is this what prevents a permanent base of with troops on the ground in Eastern Europe? And on the rapid, on the NATO response force, you say very short notice. How many, what is very short notice? Can you be sort of more precise in terms of days? And also, when can we expect this force to be operational, this enhanced force to be operational?
First, on this question about permanent, the words permanent. Personally, I do believe that what matters is not words, but real presence on the ground. And actually, a very few things in life are permanent. Furthermore, we are actually faced with a very volatile security situation, an evolving security situation. So what matters is an ability to adjust and adapt to that evolving security situation very rapidly. So what matters is that we have what we need for as long as necessary. And that's exactly the essence of the Readiness Action Plan. And I know that our Eastern allies, that for many good reasons are very much concerned about the current security situation, will be very pleased with this Readiness Action Plan. The bottom line is you will see more visible NATO presence in the East. Now, short notice. What is short notice? Now we are into all the military technical details that will be worked out after the summit. But I can assure you that it will be at very, very short notice. So we are speaking about a very few days.
NPR.
Since the Ukrainian government announced, as you were meeting last week in the emergency NAC, that it does plan to submit to Parliament a request to change its non-aligned status and to seek new membership in NATO, after that you were interpreted on some media outlets as being encouraging toward that move and saying that, yes, of course, Ukraine has the right to do this. But what kind of time frame would you be talking about if, in fact, the new Ukrainian parliament did pass this? Ukraine seems to think that perhaps it would be a short time frame, but if you look at the examples of Georgia and Moldova, of course, we know that it's probably not a short time frame. Have those discussions with the Ukrainian government begun at all after Prime Minister Yatsenyuk announced that? And secondly, there was some surprise seemingly in social media that Russia was not invited to the summit. Should Russia have been surprised it didn't get an invitation?
No, I don't think so. on Ukraine, what will happen is the following. I understand that the current political leadership in Kiev envisages that the new parliament, after the parliamentary elections in Ukraine, will change the legislation on non-alliance status. Now, we have to wait for elections. We have to wait for the legislative procedure in the new Ukrainian parliament. If the parliament passes a legislation that removes the non-alliance provision, then I would expect Ukraine to raise the issue with NATO within the NATO-Ukraine Commission. And based on that, Ukraine and NATO will then work out a plan for further development of the NATO-Ukraine partnership. But as you indicated yourself, timelines here can be very difficult to predict because very much will depend on Ukraine herself and Ukraine's ability to actually carry through the necessary reforms, adapt to NATO standards, and eventually fulfill the necessary criteria. So it's very, very difficult at this early stage of such a process to say anything about timelines.
Georgia Media.
Thank you, Georgian Public Broadcaster Ketevan Kardava. Secretary General, Georgian delegation is coming to Wales with the hope that the package which NATO will offer Georgia make country more secure. Unfortunately, it is not membership action plan, but still, can you tell us more about this package, how it will make country more secure, how it will prepare for membership, as our main aim is membership of NATO, and also will the final document say more than in Bucharest? Thank you.
The Georgia package will definitely bring Georgia closer to NATO. Without going into too many details, I can mention some of the headlines. We will establish what we call a defense capacity building mission in Georgia with a particular focus on the Ministry of Defense. and assist Georgia in continued reforms and modernization of the defense and security sector. Next, we will step up our efforts to improve the ability of Georgian armed forces to work and operate together with NATO forces, including through more Georgian participation in NATO exercises. Thirdly, occasionally exercises, military exercises, might also be organized in Georgia, in particular with a view to engaging NATO partners in such exercises. Fourth, we are also considering the establishment of a military training center in Georgia, again with a particular view to engaging NATO partners. There might also be a regional dimension in such a training center. And finally, we are also considering an expansion of the NATO liaison office in Tbilisi. So all in all, you will see very concrete measures that will bring Georgia closer to NATO.
François.
Oui, Pascal Verdeau, France 3. Une question en français, si vous le permettez, monsieur le secrétaire général. Je voudrais revenir donc à cette force de réaction rapide. J'ai un peu de mal à comprendre. Il existe déjà une force de réaction rapide de l'OTAN qui n'a jamais vraiment été opérationnelle. Qu'est-ce qui fait que cette nouvelle force proposée par un certain nombre de pays pourrait tout d'un coup, comment dire, impressionner un petit peu M. Poutine? Est-ce que vous n'êtes pas plutôt dans la gesticulation diplomatique et militaire? Et si vous le permettez, une deuxième question. Vous avez dit récemment que la Russie ne considérait plus l'OTAN comme un partenaire. Est-ce qu'aujourd'hui, à la lumière des événements en Ukraine, l'OTAN considère la Russie comme un adversaire? Voire, vous avez employé l'expression d'agression russe, voire comme un ennemi au bon vieux temps de la guerre froide.
First, on this, or the NATO response force and the spearhead I described. The purpose of this is, of course, to make sure that any potential aggressor knows that we are prepared to respond rapidly if needed. So it is to emphasize our collective defense. According to Article 5, it is an improved ability to act fast through reinforcements if needed. The spearhead force will be the first step, but of course it will be followed by more force if needed. But we do believe that there is a very strong deterrent effect of having such a response force at very high alert, so that any potential aggressor knows that if they even started to think about attacking a NATO ally, they would meet not only national troops from that specific NATO ally, but they would meet NATO troops. That's the purpose of this spearhead force. Now, how to describe our relationship with Russia? Honestly speaking, since the end of the Cold War, we have spent a lot of efforts to develop a constructive partnership, a partnership with Russia. And I think the peak of that was the NATO-Russia summit in Lisbon in November 2010. At that summit, we decided that we would develop a true strategic partnership between NATO and Russia. However, today, we must face the reality that Russia does not consider NATO a partner. We can see in Russian military documents, we can listen to statements from Russian political leaders that they consider NATO an adversary. I strongly regret that, because I do believe that the right thing for Euro-Atlantic security would be to develop a strong partnership with Russia. But of course, we cannot afford to be naive. We don't have any illusions. We are faced with the reality that Russia considers us an adversary, and we will adapt to that situation.
The Times.
Sorry, Deborah. The UK threat level, security level, has been increased last week, and UK police have warned that potential threats to the summit, potentially from even Islamic State. I was wondering, are you worried that that could happen, that the summit could be targeted? And also, what kind of measures are going to be made by NATO countries, potentially, to respond to Islamic State in Syria and Iraq? Could you join with maybe this coalition of the willing that the US are trying to get together?
First, on the terrorist threat, I'm not aware of a direct threat at the summit as such. But, of course, taking into account the security situation around us, and, of course, not least the security situation in Syria and Iraq, and the fact that fighters originating from our countries are traveling to Syria and Iraq and could potentially return and carry out terrorist attacks. Of course, that general situation necessitates high alert. I have full confidence that the British authorities will address this issue in a very professional and efficient manner. On Iraq, I welcome that individual allies have taken steps to help the Iraqi government in different ways. I welcome the U.S. military engagement that is needed to stop the Islamic State from advancing further and eventually defeat the Islamic State. I also welcome that other allies have contributed in different ways. But, of course, it's for individual allies to take those decisions. NATO, as an alliance, hasn't received any request for engagement.
German television.
Raymond Löw from Austrian Radio Television. A question on Afghanistan linked with Iraq. I mean, the IS success in Iraq has been interpreted by many as a consequence of the fact that the Americans left too early. I wonder what kind of lessons do you draw for Afghanistan from that experience of IS in Iraq? Are there any that you see? Thanks.
First of all, I would like to stress that, as I see it, there is a clear difference between Iraq and Afghanistan. In Afghanistan, we have helped build a very capable security force of 350,000 soldiers and police, and we have seen them take the lead of our security operations during the last year, and they have done so in a very professional manner. So we are confident that they will be able to take full responsibility for the security by the end of this year as planned. Having said that, obviously there are lessons to be learned from what we have seen in Iraq, and I think Iraq is an example that it may be needed to continue defense capacity building and training activities to assist, to give advice to local security forces. Actually, that was what we did in NATO until 2011. We had a NATO training mission in Iraq until 2011, but of course we had to withdraw because the Iraqi authorities did not prolong our security arrangements. I regret that, but of course that was an Iraqi decision and we had to respect that. But I think it sends a signal that such training activities can be needed, and that's exactly why we have offered to establish a training mission in Afghanistan after we complete our combat mission. I'm encouraged by the fact that both presidential candidates have declared that they are ready to sign the necessary legal arrangements soon after taking office. So I'm still confident that we will be able to deploy a training mission to Afghanistan from the 1st of January 2015 as planned.
We have only a few minutes left. I'll go with the BBC.
Secretary General Jonathan Marcus from the BBC. Back to the vexed question of the French and the Mistral, if you may, but from NATO's perspective, everything in this summit is about sending signals of determination and resolve to Moscow. It might seem strange, therefore, to many people that one ally at least is reinforcing Russia's military dispositions at this present time. Can you tell us whether NATO has considered seriously that perhaps the alliance should take over the order for the two landing ships from France? And if you haven't considered that, why not?
It has not been considered because the issue has not been raised. And as I said in my previous answer, this is for the French government to make that decision. Should the French government raise such an issue, I'm sure allies would have a discussion on that, but I'm not going to prejudge the outcome of that discussion.
Reuters.
Adrian Crawford, Reuters. Secretary General, can you comment on President Putin's comment over the weekend that he wants immediate talks on statehood for southern and eastern Ukraine? And a second, if I may, on the readiness action plan, how many forward operating bases do you expect there to be in Eastern Europe and the Baltics? And who will pay for these infrastructure improvements you say that will be needed? Thank you.
The first on President Putin's statement. Well, I think first and foremost, it is for the Ukrainians to decide what should be the future of their country. And I have noted that President Poroshenko has announced that he is willing to carry forward reforms that would take into account views expressed by representatives of the eastern regions of Ukraine. And I think the Ukrainians should discuss this, and the Ukrainians should take decisions without outside interference. Ukraine is a sovereign nation, and it's for the Ukrainian people to decide the future of their country. On the readiness action plan, today I'm not able to give an exact figure as to how many forward operating bases we will see. This is part of the military details that will be worked out after the summit. And finally, who will pay? We know that this will be a joint effort. So all allies will, one way or the other, participate in paying for this. And this is a reason why I argued that we will have to increase defense investments in the coming years. In more specific terms, I know, and I also appreciate, that host nations, that are nations that may receive such reinforcements, are willing to provide what we call host nation support. So this will be a true collective effort in the spirit of solidarity.
Thank you very much. I know there are many other questions we don't have time to answer now. We hope to see you all in Wales, and hopefully we'll see some of you at our technical briefing later this afternoon at NATO headquarters. Thank you.